Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Department of Homeland Security has reported some 2,000 children have been separated from their parents, illegally crossing the U.S. border during a six-week period in April and May. There are probably more. The updated numbers are not yet available and won't be for a few more weeks. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the policy has been used to justify the separations last month.
So we're sending a message to the world, really. The border is not open. The border is not open. Don't come unlawfully. Make your claim, make your application, and wait your turn, as do millions of people throughout the world.
Washington Post congressional reporter Sean Sullivan will be joining us in a minute. He's been covering the issue and recently visited detention facilities down by the border. In the meantime, I'd like to hear from listeners this hour. We want to hear from all the different points of view on this very controversial issue. You can call us at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you think about the policy of separating children from their parents at the border to send a message to the rest of the world not to come to the United States, that the borders are not open? 614-292-8513. It's a controversial topic. We expect, our callers and all of our guests to be civil in the conversation. If you want to email us, you can at allsides@wosu.org. Okay, we have Sean Sullivan from The Washington Post on the air right now. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Good to be with you.
I said that you had recently visited detention facilities. Tell us where you visited and what you saw.
Yeah, I was in McAllen, Texas, which is right near the border between Texas and Mexico. And I was there on Sunday, and the Department of Homeland Security officials gave reporters a brief tour of one of the detention facilities and processing centers. They didn't allow us to take photographs or, you know, otherwise record it. But, you know, basically, the day that I visited, the official said there were about 1,200 people that were being detained there, including about 200 children. And as we walked through, what we essentially saw in this really sprawling facility was these cells that were effectively cages with chain link fences that were housing these detainees. There were a lot of young children. A lot of them appeared confused. Some appeared upset. A woman that we came across as we walked by was fighting back tears. She was crying as we were going through. So there was, you know, a lot of confusion and a lot of, upset detainees when we were there. And as I said, the conditions were, you know, essentially cages with tall fences that were housing these detainees. And some of them had, you know, sort of modest mattress pads that they were laying on the ground. There were some, modest benches that some were sitting on. They had access to food and water, and the officials said that they had access to meals as well. But again, this is not a hospitable setting by any stretch. And again, there seemed to be a lot of sort of confusion and distress on the part of these people who had been detained.
What kind of place was it? We've heard about them using a former Walmart store. I mean, what was it, like a big box store or something like that?
It was a very big facility that the Homeland Security Department was running. It was separated into different sections. You know, you had cells with these fences in parts of this location. In another part, you had these video processing terminals where people would go to the terminals and, you know, they would talk to customs agents who were on the other end. And those agents were sometimes in other cities. It was a very big, sort of sprawling indoor space. It was climate controlled. Mm-hmm. It was very, very hot outside the day that I was there. It was about 97 degrees, so it was considerably cooler inside. But, yeah, it did have the feeling of a sort of large warehouse-type facility that was separated into these cells that, again, were effectively cages where you had chain-like fences that went very, very high up into the air, probably more than 10 feet up as we walked through. Mm.
What did the officials tell you about what happens to the children from there?
Well, what they explained to us was that the children, many of the children that we saw in that facility were unaccompanied minors, but they did also say that at that facility, children are separated from their parents if, you know, the courts bring criminal charges against their parents. And, of course, under the Trump administration zero tolerance policy, you know, that's being enforced across the board right now. But then they said that, you know, from there are other facilities that they are taken to, both the adults and the children. They said that their goal was to try to process people out of that facility within 12 hours up to a maximum of 72 hours. And then there were other facilities that those people would be transported to, other locations. So that was sort of meant to be, at least the way it was explained to us, as a sort of initial point where immigrants would be processed, and then there would be next steps from there, and they would be sent to different places, and that was sort of an open-ended possibility.
We've heard reports of large groups of children, and when I mean say large, I mean numbers 20 to 30 children at a time being flown to other parts of the country. They're not just separated inside of the same town. They're separated by hundreds, if not thousands, of miles.
Yeah, I didn't. We didn't really get any clarity or specific explanations from the officials at that facility, but there were some Democratic members of Congress that toured that facility and some other facilities in Texas. And what they said is they talked to some individuals at some of those facilities who were operating under the understanding that, you know, their children could be in Miami or could be in other places around the country, and there was uncertainty about where they were.
This is a policy put into action. It's not a law. Clarify, tell us once again why President Trump and others in his administration are blaming Democrats for it.
Well, what they're saying is, look, you know, we're not implementing some new legislation or law that is, you know, allowing us to do this, and that, you know, it should be up to Congress to figure this out. But the reality is they are enforcing a rule that previous administrations, you know, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, did not enforce in this way. So ultimately, it's up to the federal government to decide how it wants to enforce the laws that are on the books. And ultimately, what the Trump administration is doing with its zero tolerance policy is enforcing these regulations in a much more strict way than the Obama administration and the Bush administration before that chose to do.
Is there any evidence that the administration is relying on anything more than media reports to convey the zero tolerance policy to people who may be coming from other countries?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is send, you know, a message, and also, you know, try to live up to some of the hardline rhetoric that President Trump campaigned on as a candidate. Mm-hmm. And we've heard a lot from the president about dangerous criminal undocumented immigrants who have come into the country. He's presented this as, you know, a national security threat, a safety threat to Americans. He's warned about violent gang members coming across the border. And so I think what the administration is trying to do is saying, you know, we campaigned on this stuff and we are trying to follow through on it. We're going to use the levers of power that exist for us at the federal level to do this. And if Congress, you know, is or isn't going to act, we're still going to, you know, use whatever means we have to try to create a strict environment. And you're clearly seeing, you know, pretty widespread backlash, not just from Democrats, but also from many Republicans who have expressed concerns about this policy.
49 Democrats in the Senate have signed on to a bill that would end the policy. So far, no Republicans have signed it, but Senator Ted Cruz has weighed in. Others like Rob Portman from Ohio, they're kind of stacking up. What are they saying about what they might do in the Senate?
Well, they're concerned, and you do have, you know, different proposals from different members of Congress to try to either stop the administration from being able to implement this policy or to try to create a situation where, you know, fewer family separations occur. And you're right, there is one Democratic proposal that all Democrats have signed on to, and you see Cruz and others with their own proposals. But what I think that reflects is the political sensitivity to this, that Republicans are starting to realize that this could be a political liability for them in the midterm elections, which are only a few months away. And if they don't speak out against this, if they don't, come up with a remedy for this, they could pay a political price. And you look at somebody like Ted Cruz, he is up for re-election in November. Mm-hmm. He is running in a state where there are many immigrants, in a state that has a long border with Mexico. And so this is an issue that I think is felt pretty acutely back home in his state. And so we're seeing a reaction from him. And his Democratic opponent, too, has been pretty outspoken about this issue in the last few days.
The president has said he wants Democrats to sign on to legislation to fund the border wall. If that suddenly happened, has he said he would let the children go or that he would change the policy?
Well, there are negotiations to try to change the policy, to end the policy as part of a broader deal. And as you mentioned, the president certainly has said repeatedly that he is committed to securing funding for a wall on the border with Mexico. This is something he campaigned on, so this shouldn't surprise anybody. And he's been pushing for this for the past few months. And so we'll see what happens in the next 24 to 48 hours. Mm-hmm. But right now, Republicans in the House are trying to see if they could pass one of two bills. One is a more conservative hardline legislation, and the other is more of a compromise bill. But it's unclear at this point if either of those two bills can pass and if a bigger immigration deal can get done. And if it doesn't get done, then we're left with the question of what happens. Will the administration decide to change the way it enforces this zero tolerance policy? Well, so far, they've shown no signs that they are willing to do that, and they're doubling down on their defense of their practices.
The compromise bill, what would that do?
Well, there are several different components, including protecting young undocumented immigrants. As you may remember, Trump ended a program last year that would shield certain young undocumented immigrants from deportation. And so a lot of members of Congress are saying, look, we need to create a solution for these young undocumented immigrants who, are sort of left in limbo right now. Mm-hmm. So lawmakers want to address that. There's, of course, the question of wall funding. There's other components, including, curbing legal immigration and changing visa laws and regulations and things like that. But again, these are bigger, more broad packages that go beyond just family separation.
Sean Sullivan, what kind of timeline do you see here? As you said, I mean, this is an Achilles heel for Republicans in the midterm elections. What's the tipping point here, do you think, before they go away for the summer?
Well, that remains to be seen. And, right now we're in primary season in some states. A lot of states have finished their primaries. The voters haven't really fully turned their attention to the November midterm yet. That typically happens after Labor Day. Mm-hmm. But we're getting close to that point. And this is an issue that is, getting widespread coverage on television news, getting widespread coverage in the print media, radio, online. This is, the biggest story in the country really right now. And so I think a lot of voters are looking at this situation unfolding. And the question, of course, is, when they go to the polls in November, are they going to be thinking about this then? Are we going to be talking about other issues? Are there going to be different priorities? Those things, we can't predict right now, of course. But at least in this moment, I think this is something that voters are looking at, they're tuning into, and clearly political strategists in both parties recognize that and are adapting their strategies accordingly.
Sean Sullivan, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Happy to jump on.
Sean Sullivan, Washington Post congressional reporter. We will continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Department of Homeland Security last week reported that nearly 2,000 children have been separated from their parents who have illegally crossed the border during a six-week period in April and May. Current figures won't be available for a few weeks, but the policy of separating families as part of a so-called zero-tolerance policy is ongoing. Attorney General Jeff Sessions last week cited Bible verse to defend the policy.
If you violate the law, you subject yourself to prosecution. And I would cite you to the Apostle Paul and his clear and wise command in Romans 13 to obey the laws of the government, because God has ordained the government for his purposes.
Joining us right now is Executive Director of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. That's a nonprofit organization serving the Hispanic and Latino community. Josue Vicente, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
Coming up, we're going to be hearing from Federation for American Immigration Reform and others who support strict restrictions and to us one degree or another, this policy of separating children from parents. In general, what do you know about what's happening in these detention centers?
Well, actually, families here in Central Ohio have arrived who have experienced the separation of children back there in the border. This obviously is causing an extremely amount of stress. These adults arriving to Central Ohio is coming already with PTSD and some other mental issues because they don't know anything about their kids. They don't even know where situated.
There's people coming to Central Ohio?
Yes, we have already a couple of people that have been released by immigration with the bracelet so they can have, you know, the process done here in Central Ohio. And then, obviously, you know, we're seeing this need is creating a totally different problem in the United States too as well, the separation of the families, because the stress levels that we have seen in them and then the stress levels they have seen in a couple kids as well that we have been in contact directly, it is outrageous. It is out of this world. And you never imagine that this is happening here in the United States. And then, unfortunately, you know, this is happening here because a political agenda, because what we have here about a negotiation to build a wall. I think that this is going far beyond the negotiation. It's going in a level that nobody really wants to negotiate something. As hard the problem it is, I think that we shouldn't be using a kid from no nationality in the world to negotiate any political agendas. And it's happening here in the United States, and I believe that we need to wake up.
Also joining us by phone now, National Media Director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, Ira Melman. Welcome back, Ira.
Thanks very much. Good morning.
You've called the zero-tolerance policy the inevitable result of a failure by Congress to correct flaws in the law. What flaws?
Well, there are many flaws. Most importantly, we continue to allow people to come to the United States and put in bogus asylum claims to try to remain in the United States. And we also have an anti-trafficking law that says that if you are under 18 and you arrive at the border, we have to let you in unless you happen to come from Mexico or Canada. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, we also have a judicial agreement that the Obama administration accepted some years ago that says you cannot detain families as a unit for more than 20 days, which is clearly an insufficient amount of time to determine whether somebody has a plausible claim to enter the United States. And so what we have done is create two bad options here for the administration to deal with. Either we let the entire family go, in which case we're probably never going to see them again, or we have to detain the adults. That there's no limit on the amount of time that we can detain the adults. The children can only be detained for a maximum of 20 days. And so those are the two bad options. What needs to happen is that we need to have a change in the law that says you can detain families as a unit for a reasonable amount of time in order to determine whether they have a legal claim to remain in the United States. But Congress refuses to do that. You have a lot of people in Congress who would rather have the political issue than deal with this tragic problem. Nobody wants to see families separated.
Well, why do you call it inevitable? Because the previous two administrations had the same circumstances in place all things being equal, and they did not institute a policy like this.
Well, and as a result, we had these surges of people coming across the border illegally. We also have an obligation to see to it that our humanitarian policies are not abused, and that our laws to prevent human trafficking aren't used as basically a get-out-of-jail-free card for families that come to the United States with their kids.
Why are you calling them bogus asylum claims?
Because most of them are turned down. In many cases, the people who are released, and in fact, the majority of cases where people are released, they don't show up for their hearings. It is just an avenue for them to get into the United States. They understand that if you arrive at the border, you present a credible fear claim that we are obligated to let you in to pursue your case here. As you do this, more and more cases build up. The backlog builds up. People disappear. This is what is happening. We should not allow humanitarian programs to be abused in this way. We should provide protection for people who are legitimately fleeing political persecution, but we can't allow people to just show up here en masse and enter these claims in the expectation that we're going to release them and that they're not going to show up again.
Josue Vicente, I mean, what about that? I mean, people are entering the U.S. illegally. If I broke a law, I'd have consequences.
Yes, and actually, you know, in the law, and the federal law, it doesn't say anything about people crossing the border illegal. It is a criminal sanction. It is just basically a misdemeanor. You know,
it You're is saying like, it's not a criminal sanction,
right,
it's a misdemeanor. Okay.
Right, exactly. It is like somebody else, you know, seeing a stop sign, driving, and you drive by the stop sign, then, you know, that's a misdemeanor, you know. That doesn't mean that you are a criminal for that. So what happened right now in this current administration is they tried to criminalize everybody who's crossing the border. And the fact in here is that all these families right now, they're crossing the border. They're not crossing the border with the intention of disappearing in the United States. Are crossing the border because, you know, they come in from persecution. They come in from gang activity. They come in from running away from the drug cartels.
And we've heard that, but why not enter the border at the legal entry points then?
If you see all these families right now, most of the families on the border separating their kids are coming from Salvador, Guatemala, mm-hmm. Honduras, mm-hmm. which is Central America. And they all come in because the law says when you try to look or pursue asylum in the United States, and then you have to turn in yourself into the immigration authorities. Mm-hmm. And that's what they do. They go to the borders, and they go there to the and then turn in themselves into the immigrant authorities. There, automatically, the law of the United States says that you have all authorities in immigration, they must process this person looking for asylum. Mm-hmm. So they're not really criminals. They're not crossing the border with the intention of, you know, violating any law. They try to follow the laws of the United States, you know. And just because it happens to be Latinos, it doesn't mean it's any different from people coming from other countries to as well looking for asylum.
So what about that, Ira Melman? They're just crossing the border to be taken into custody to turn themselves in.
Well, in many cases, they are. That's correct. Let's just clear up something. It is a misdemeanor on a first offense, but it is punishable by up to 6 months in jail. Second offenses are criminal offenses and can be punished by up to 2 years in jail. But, you know, that's beside the point. The question is, can we expand our asylum system to a point where it deals with just general social breakdown in other countries? Our political asylum system was initiated to deal with repression at the hands of government. It really is a relic of the Cold War, when we were dealing with people who were being oppressed by, you know, the Soviet Union or other Soviet bloc countries. And quite frankly, not many of them could take advantage of it because the Iron Curtain prevented them from leaving. Now we're dealing with precisely the opposite, governments that apparently have no control over what is going on in their countries. And that constitutes an awfully large percentage of the world. We are dealing with failed states, and it's not just the United States. Europe is dealing with it. You know, if you listen to All Things Considered yesterday, there was a story. The German government is hanging by a thread over this. The Italians have said we're not going to allow any more ships to dock because it is just so overwhelming. We cannot deal with the rash of failed states by simply dealing with humanitarian fallout. What we need to do is to start addressing the problem at the core. If these governments cannot exercise the basic responsibilities of sovereignty to protect the interests of their people, then we have to take diplomatic and economic action against these countries in much the same way that the administration is now taking action against countries that cheat in trade or that steal our intellectual property and send it back to us. We cannot tolerate them ignoring the basic concerns and interests of their citizens and expecting us to deal with the fallout.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the issues of separating families at the border right now. It's a policy that's been in place for about 8 weeks total at this point. We know for about 6 to 8 weeks, about 2,000 children have been separated from their parents. You just heard from Ira Melman, National Media Director of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Also with me, Josue Vicente. He's the Executive Director of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. That's a nonprofit organization serving the Hispanic and Latino community. Questions or comments, give us a call. Tell us what you think. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We are at a different place in history than when a lot of those asylum laws were put into place. Josue, doesn't make them any, you know, one right over the other. But what about what Ira Melman is saying about we can't do this anymore? There's just too many countries in disarray.
Yes, and I understand that too as well. But I mean, this is a lack of, I believe, of international policy. There is a part in effect of the globalization, you know, of the economics and the businesses. You know, we believe that now these multi-transnational companies, you know, they do business in the different countries and stuff like that. They affect sometimes countries that are not in the same socioeconomic status as the United States because they go, we open our businesses there, we take out of business, you know, a lot of these mom-and-pop businesses. And what they have to do, there is no word anymore because the large corporations, not only United States but some other countries, they go and take over these jobs, and then they have to move. They're forced to move out of these countries because there is no more opportunities there. So we're lacking, when we're thinking about economic, when we're thinking about socioeconomics, you know, we're just thinking about the corporations, the huge corporations, you know, they're making money, but we're not thinking the consequences that we're going to be bringing into those countries that we're operating the businesses. Many people are complaining about United States taking their corporations to other countries, you know. But the problem is nobody really addressing this as entire problem. It is not just about immigration. It is not just about people trying to move out to from their countries. I believe I haven't seen an immigrant, at least in the Latino community, that the best wishes are to move to the United States. They're forced to move out of their countries because something happened there. They forced them to get out and move and look for a better place for their families, like anybody else. So I think there needs to be happening a conversation about the nations, about, you know, America. And when I'm talking about America, I'm talking about entire America,
the,
you know,
central, the south, the,
right,
you know, okay,
exactly,
and north. We have an email from Sue in Delaware. She says, two questions. Has anyone estimated the cost of housing, transporting, staff supervision resulting from this Trump policy? And is anyone in the administration concerned about this at a time when our national debt continues to climb? I don't know what the national debt has to do with it, but there is a cost associated with it to it. Ira Melman, the cost associated with this, it works in your calculations?
Well, there was a report recently that it's costing $670 a day per child who is in these shelters. And by the way, I mean, these kids are not being kept in cages. They're being kept in very nice surroundings. Clearly, it is not the same. They should not be separated from their families. In an ideal situation, we wouldn't be doing this. But it is costing us a significant amount of money, but it also costs a significant amount of money not to enforce immigration laws that you are required to provide education, health care. What we need to do is to discourage people from trying to abuse the system. We need to have a system that allows people with legitimate asylum claims, legitimate political persecution based on race, religion, national origin, the other criteria that are given, and not keep expanding these things to say that, you know, everybody who is in an unfortunate situation is part of some social group that deserves to be granted asylum in the United States. They are in serious situations. The Attorney General, when he made the announcement, said that, you know, he's not denying the severity of the conditions, but this is not the way that we can deal with it. We need to deal with it. You know, I think there is an agreement between myself and the other guests that we do need to address some of these other problems, including the rampant corruption. The rampant corruption in those countries is not a new phenomenon. That's been going on for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. It needs to be corrected. Sovereignty comes with responsibility. And if you're not exercising your responsibility as a sovereign government and forcing us to deal with the fallout, then we have to take steps to make sure that you do exercise your responsibilities.
Sherry in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I don't know the speaker's name, but I have to say ditto to that speaker who was just talking. It is not the U.S. government's responsibility to manage the situation because other people, other governments, do not control what's going on in their country. To want to immigrate to this country because of domestic violence or gang violence, in my mind, is not an excuse. As a child growing up, I experienced domestic violence, and it never occurred to my mother to leave her country because of that. So she solved her problems, and other people need to solve theirs.
Okay.
And I think our Congress should get a spine and start doing their job, including handling this problem, as well as putting pressure on these foreign governments. So I couldn't agree more with your speaker who's talking about that. And by the way, my husband came to this country legally.
Okay. Sherry, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Yeah. We will be returning to the conversation. We hope you will, too. The number is 614-292-8513. I want to say thanks to Ira Melman, National Media Director of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Coming up, we'll hear from the Center for Immigration Studies. And staying with us, Josue Vicente, Executive Director of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the Trump administration's so-called zero-tolerance policy that separates minor children from their parents who are accused of illegal entry. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has vowed to prosecute all illegal border crossers who, when taken into custody, must be separated from their minor children. Those children are then taken to other facilities, sometimes hundreds or thousands of miles away. ProPublica has made public an audio recording from inside a U.S. Customs and Border Protection detention facility last week. The person who made the recording requested anonymity and estimated that the children on the recording are between 4 and 10 years old and had appeared to have been recently separate from their parents, which might account for the sense of panic. Still with us is executive. So let's listen.
No, Papa. No, Papa. No, Papa. No, Papa. No.
No.
There's a lot more from that recording. We'll have a link to it on our website at WOSU.org. Still with us is Executive Director of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition, a nonprofit organization serving the Hispanic and Latino community, Josue Vicente. Also joining us by phone is Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C., Mark Krikorian. The Center for Immigration Studies is a conservative think tank that wants to limit both legal and illegal immigration. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
You've said that zero tolerance is an essential part of asserting control. How so?
Well, the problem here at the border, specifically that we're dealing with is that the number of people bringing children with them has skyrocketed, because under the Obama administration, that was a ticket to be released into the United States. Back in 2013, 15,000 people were apprehended by the Border Patrol coming across in what they call family units. They had never even kept numbers before that because it was so small. Last year, 75,000 people. The numbers from last month compared to the May of last year has increased something like sixfold. When you reward something, you get more of it. And under the Obama administration, we rewarded having a child with you by letting you go into the United States and neither prosecuting you nor detaining you, depending on what the situation is. And what this zero tolerance policy is a restoration of something that had started under the Bush administration, where they used only certain parts of the border and prosecuted everybody for the misdemeanor of entering without inspection. They didn't lock them up in penitentiary. You were only held for like 5 days or so. The point was to send the message. It worked, but it was only small parts of the border. Obama rolled it back. The attorney general has restored that policy. The point being, send the message to the illegal immigrant himself and to prospective illegal immigrants abroad that we are not, you know, we're not fooling around anymore. Sneaking across the border, infiltrating the border to enter the United States will result in criminal prosecution. And what the critics of the consequences of this, where the kids, of course, don't go to jail with the parents, that's not allowed in any other kind of context. What the critics are saying is that if you bring a kid with you, you should be exempt from prosecution, that kid should be a kind of human shield against the enforcement of immigration laws. And that's not acceptable.
Josue Vincente, what about that human shield argument that the numbers have gone up? Now some would associate that with higher levels of crime and chaos in the countries from which they come.
Well, to start, Obama administration, they never give a free ticket to the Latino community, to the immigrants coming from Central America, from Mexico, to as well, to start. Let's remember that during Obama administration, we have the large number of deportation to Mexico than any other president in the history of the United States happened. So being said that, this is a problem that is being used a political against Democrats and Republicans just to win elections. That's the hot ball here, you know. And here in the Latino community, we're tired of that. I mean, we're tired that they're using our needs, the needs of the people, you know, who wants to get better for their life. In terms of the kids, you know, to begin, a family move to a better place, to a better location, whether it's United States, whether it's Spain, whether it's Germany, and look for a better life for their kids. If they don't bring their kids, there is no point to move and look and pursue a better life. So this argument of having the kids as a shield, it doesn't make any sense.
But the numbers have gone up dramatically.
Yes. And that's because, you know, the problem there in Central America, it is a problem that, I mean, there is not a solution. I never hear probably somebody from the United States says, you know, what is that we can do there in Central America to not to punish the country, to help the country, to make sure, you know, that they don't have this type of violence they have in Salvador, in Honduras. How can we, as a neighbors, fix this? Because it is affecting everybody. It is not just right here in the United States. People crossing the border, you know, if they're coming from Guatemala, they come into El Salvador, coming through Mexico, and then finally to the United States. All that obviously creating difficulties, creating, you know, problems for everybody. But at the end of the day, what is that we realistically are doing to make sure that that doesn't happen in the correct way, in the humanistic way?
Sean in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment to the one speaker. I think it's sick that we're using these kids as a political message to these other countries and using them as pawns that way. particularly when they, if they go to the port of entry, they get turned back and can't enter there because we don't have the people to process them. And then to the other point that was just made, I think that was great. You know, the Trump administration has basically reduced foreign aid, and we're not doing anything to solve, you know, help solve the root of the problem by helping address the violence in those countries. They're actually reducing it and creating tension with those countries and not trying to solve the problem, but instead just using these kids as a political tool to get a border wall.
Mark Krikorian, do you support efforts to bring about, to resolve the problems in places like, you know, Honduras, Nicaragua, wherever they're coming from?
Obviously. But we're, it's not, we don't have the power to fix those countries. If we did, we'd wave a magic wand and everybody in the world would be Denmark. But that's not the way human societies work. You know, the president, remember, he had contrasted immigrants from Norway from other places. That was a good example because Norway in the 19th century sent fully 10% of its entire population to the United States. But it took a century and a half or more for that country to reach a level of development where there's just not that many people who would want to leave. Why would you want to leave? Obviously, the people who are coming here from the three northern countries of Central America, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, that's mm-hmm. where this issue is. Those countries may well turn out to be, you know, develop in the long run in such a way that people don't want to leave anymore. But, you know, we can't wait for 100 years, 200 years maybe for that to happen. That's not something that our throwing money at them is going to fix. Those societies have to develop on their own. We can maybe play a role, but it's very limited. Our role is there's just not that much we can actually in the real world do to change those societies. We don't tell them what to do. They need to change themselves. In the meantime, we need to protect our own country and our own people. And this idea that if we only solved the root causes, it would all go away is one of those things that's true but irrelevant in a policy sense.
You know, it seems like the president in just the last few days has doubled down again in the assertions that these people are criminals, that they're rapists and murderers and gang members and that kind of a thing. And that's just not the case, Mark Krikorian. Do you think it helps that the president is casting that kind of a, or painting people with such a broad brush?
Yeah, no, it never does. I mean, that's kind of the way the president talks, but it's also essentially a sign of how polarized the debate is because the people he's arguing against are saying that immigrants are somehow better, morally kind of better than Americans. You hear this all the time. They're more hardworking. They have more family values. They're just superior to Americans. That whole thing is nonsense. That whole form of debate that immigrants are monsters or immigrants are saints is ridiculous. They're regular people like anyone else. Some of them are criminals. Some of them aren't. The same mix of good and bad as in anything else. It's a policy question. Is it a sensible idea to allow anyone who brings a kid with him to be released into the United States? That is the core issue. That is what Senator Feinstein, for instance, from California, has introduced legislation to that effect, that if you have a kid with you, that is a get-out-of-jail-free card, a ticket into America. If you do that, the six-fold increase in the number of illegal immigrants bringing kids over the past 4 years will just continue. It's basically the same kind of thing we saw in Germany a few years ago, only spread out, kind of slow-motion version of the disaster that you saw in Germany. And it's not just Central Americans coming through Central America. There's an increasing number of people from Africa and from Asia and elsewhere who are using Central America and Mexico as a conduit into the U.S. If the message gets out that a kid is a guaranteed way of being released into the country, you're going to start seeing immigrants from Congo and Nepal start bringing their kids, too.
Vicky from Prospect, you're on the air. Hi, Vicky.
Hi. My comment is I support Mark Kirkham.
Mark Krikorian,
Krikorian. And what he's saying, because if These people are coming in through our country, across our border, illegally.
Mm-hmm.
The parents are really the ones that need to take responsibility for their actions. And if their children are taken away, it's because they have come into our country illegally. We have laws. They need to be regarded.
Josue Vicente?
Yes, and that's obviously a comment that is really a comment that is really uneducated, because there is no law, no federal law, that it says that the kids has to be separated from the parents crossing the border. So that's an argument, you know, that he's saying he's saying, and it is really not a law. So the importance, if we're going to go and pursue the law, it means that somebody who crossing the border and turning themselves into immigration authorities, there is a process to as well, a dual process they need to follow, and that process is breaking by this administration. And that's the problem here. You know, nobody's really talking about anything else. Everybody's saying, well, yeah, they're crossing the border and they break the law. Well, the government is breaking the law too as well, because they're not following the process, the dual process, to making sure that these families, they don't have to be separated by their kids. And then worst case scenario, I would understand, you know, that, yeah, bringing a kid to the United States is not a show, like the gentleman there was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no reason whatsoever to separate the kids from their mothers. You know, that's a totally different aspect.
Thanks, Vicky, for that call. I'm going to turn to Rudy now. Rudy, you're in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, Rudy.
Hi there. I'm from the Ohio Hispanic Fine Arts Association.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to say that I think there's a very humane way of taking care of this problem. In the Second World War, there were internment camps in California and other parts of the U.S. with Japanese prisoners, and what they did at that time.
Well, they actually weren't Japanese prisoners. They were Japanese people of Japanese descent that were imprisoned purely on the basis of their ethnic heritage. Go ahead.
Yeah. My point is that what they tried to do is keep everybody together. Families with kids and even neighbors and things like that. I'm not sure why the Trump administration can't do that or don't want to do that.
Well, your point's taken, Rudy. But Mark Krikorian, once again, you're saying that there has to be a consequence or people won't stop doing this.
Yeah, and you know, to respond to your other guest's comment, in fact, the government does have its hands tied to a degree, and is in fact, if it follows a certain policy, it is forced to separate the kids from the parents. There's in two ways. First, if you prosecute everybody.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay.
The kids can't be prosecuted and the kids can't go in jail. So, number one, that way, if you're prosecuting the parents, you end up separating them.
Right. That's the trigger point right there if you decide to prosecute. Yes.
Yes, exactly. And the other thing is, if they apply for asylum and are kept in detention, federal law or federal court rulings prohibit keeping a kid in non-criminal detention for more than 20 days. So either you let the family go together,
mm-hmm.
or you are forced by the law to separate the kid from the parent.
So, Mark,
those two problems Congress is looking to fix this week.
Okay. Well, we will look for those fixes. In the meantime, Mark Krikorian, thank you so much for joining us. I always appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies, and Josue Vicente, thanks to you as well. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Josue Vicente is Executive Director of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Thanks to everybody for your calls. Thanks for your emails. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.